Hi, how are you? Hey, put your face a little closer to the speaker for a second. Yeah, you're looking good today. Are you using a new facial cream, like an anti-wrinkle cream? You look 10 years younger. Wow, you look amazing. Doesn't that feel good when you do that? When someone says to you that you're looking good, you know they're kidding. You don't look good, you look horrible. You know that. You looked at yourself in the mirror this morning. You're hideous. You got to put all kinds of crap on your face just to look acceptable. But when someone says, "Hey, you're looking good. You're looking much younger," all of a sudden that all goes out the window, and you're feeling good, and you want to start the day fresh and exciting. You want to conquer the world just because some schmuck told you that you look good today. It's a good thing.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
You do look very good today.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Did you brush your teeth today? They look marvelous.
Whatever.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show. Back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, whatever your liquid libation may be in the morning, and join us as we take a look at the world around us. As much as it's a pleasure to be with you, the pleasure is actually all yours. And now, here's your host, Ron Van Dam.
Thank you very much. Ooh, that was long-winded. Welcome to the program. I am Ron Van Dam, and it is certainly a fantastic situation that we find ourselves in right now. You're looking for some mindless type of entertainment that might border on something intelligent. And I'm looking to make money by doing this as a profession. So I can eat, and so you can't eat. That doesn't make sense, does it? No, it doesn't. Anyway, hi. Welcome. Please be comfortable. Take your shoes off. If I was able to come into your home or your car or your office, wherever you are right now, I would gladly shake your hand and say, what the hell's wrong with you? Nonetheless, I do appreciate our time together. Ooh, that's sounding a little wrong now. Later on in the program, we're going to do an interview with a very interesting person. When I heard about this subject matter, it scared the hell out of me, which I knew would make great radio. This is a woman who has authored a book. It's a true story about her husband who was murdered by a doctor, but not like on Dateline or 2020 or anything like that. If you go into the hospital or to a doctor's office for a procedure of some sort, and they do it wrong, or they give you too much of something, or they misdiagnose or something, a lot of people don't come out of that. They go in for a simple procedure and they never come out. And that's what happened to the author of this book. Her husband was ill. The doctors mishandled the whole situation, and he died accordingly from doctor's mistakes. I know people that have been in that situation. I did know people that were in that situation, but they're no longer here. It's sad and it's scary because as much as it can happen to a loved one, it can happen to you as well. So we're going to talk about that later on in the show. It's not an up-feel-good story, but it is a cautionary tale that I think every once in a while we have to remind ourselves that the world is not rosy. Although during these past 2 years, I've been reminded that on a daily basis with this President Schmuck. I'm sorry, his last name's Trump. I get it wrong all the time. I confuse the two names somehow. It's just awful. Just, whether Trump is guilty of all this stuff or not, we know he lies all the time. We know he's manipulative. We know there's something wrong with him mentally. We know this for a fact. You know, some Republicans think that he's doing good stuff. That has nothing to do with your morals being sold to the devil. So the only way to get him out of there is to just shut him up.
Shut up!
Is that right, sir?
Shut up!
I know, I agree with you. Anyway, that has nothing to do with anything. So I was watching TV yesterday, and it happened again, and I get concerned because I'm being manipulated again. I love animals. I love animals of all sorts, not the little spiders or the ants or the flies. Don't love them too much. The mosquitoes, no, enemy of the people. But the cows and the goats and the chickens and the dogs and the cats and the pigs and the lions and the tigers and the giraffes and the elephants and the pandas, they're all adorable little things, even the little turtles. They're adorable, the little squirrels, the little birds. I love dogs as long as they don't bark all the time. Dogs are just as bad as the president if they don't shut up.
Shut up!
Yes. However, so I'm watching this commercial yesterday, and it's for the Humane Society or the ASPCA. I don't know which one it is, you know. But I felt like I was being manipulated. All of a sudden on the TV screen, the place that I watch my frivolous sexual comedies, all of a sudden, I'm brought down into the depths of sadness. I don't watch TV to be brought down into the depths of sadness. I use it as an entertainment out from this horribly confusing political life that surrounds us. I watch TV to escape. So all of a sudden, I'm watching a comedy show on TV, which I tend to watch because I like to laugh. It doesn't look like it or sound like it, but I love to laugh. It's laughter is the best medicine, although some of those pills, not so bad. When I have a pounding headache, I take an aspirin. I don't read a joke. Anyway, so I'm watching a TV comedy show. All of a sudden, on the screen, I'm bombarded by this sad music, like a death march of some sort. And on the screen is pictures of animals, dogs, and cats, emaciated, look like they haven't been fed in 7 years, and their bones are sticking out, and the animals look so sad. They look like they just read a really bad book. They look horrible, like they can't even stand up. And then across the screen it says, you can help. Well, you can help by not showing me these horrible pictures of animals. So sad. And you can't help but just feel for the animals. I've watched commercials for starving children in countries that I didn't even know existed, where there's no atmosphere and there's no humanity, and these children are like, their bones are sticking out and they're crying and they're festering in flies around their face. It looks awful. And I say to myself, oh my God, this is horrific. But it doesn't compare to the face of a puppy dog. What's wrong with me? What's wrong with me? Why does the face of a puppy dog somehow move me more than a child that has not been fed? I don't know. Admit it to me. You feel the same way, don't you? Admit it. Come on. It's just you and me. No one else is listening to this, quite obviously. I'm just saying, man. I'm just saying. Look, if I'm going to admit this, the least you can do is admit something about yourself that is not really. Now, of course, I cry when I see children in peril. As a matter of fact, I have actually walked out of movies. I remember this. There was a movie. Oh, this is like 10 years ago. Ron, you're more than 10 years old? Yeah, I know. I'm exposing my age. I'm in a movie theater. I'm watching one of these films where this young child, this like 5-year-old, has been kidnapped by these horrible international terrorist, terrible people. And the father is out to get them. He is going to be a one-man army and save his 5-year-old child daughter. And I left. I got out of the movie theater. I said, this is not entertainment to me. You are putting me in a very traumatic, horrible, sympathetic situation where a child is in peril, and kind of not the reason that I came in here with a bag of popcorn and a soda. This is not entertaining me. This is horrifying me, and that's not a good thing. So I just up and left. So I guess I do have feelings for little children in that way. I don't understand, Pia. Some of my friends have said that they love to go to horror movies where people's heads are chopped off and they're thrown into meat grinders, and or someone's behind them with a knife and they tap them on the shoulder and then they stab them in the back and stuff, and these horrifically horrible situations, and they say they love that. They find that great entertainment. And I say to them, quite honestly, I don't understand you. Why do you find that entertaining? It's horrifically horrible. Why do you knowingly pay somebody money so you can sit there and watch people being terrorized? Isn't that like bad enough in real life that we have to pay money to sit in a theater and watch it on a big screen? What are you doing in all its horrible splendor and glory of gory stuff? I went through this with Halloween, you know, that everybody like, oh, a spooky, hey, little child, come here. I want to scare the crap out of you. I want crap to go seething into your underpants. I want to scare you. And a boo. I know. What is your point? Why are you scaring children? What, you think that that's allowable by law? Do you think that's a good idea to scare the hell out of a child and put him in a bedroom at night, turn off the lights and say, have a nice dream? I mean, seriously, what the hell are you doing? This is promoted by the adult. I mean, why do we watch people getting murdered in movies? Why? Why do we watch people having sex in movies? Why? These are all things that don't happen in real life. They could, but they don't. So that's my concern. And somehow I feel that you feel the same way that I do, in one sense. In another sense, probably not. So,
we could play all the cool, exciting bumper music we want, and it won't change the fact that you're listening to a grumpy old man with a bug up his ass about just about everything. It's Ron Van Dam on New England Broadcasting. This kind of music gives him a screaming headache. That's why we play it.
Ow. 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 Got a screaming headache for some reason here. Whew. There's a product that was, never mind. I just, in my mind, I have just switched gears. Wow, that was interesting, Ron. We actually heard your mind shifting gears. You started to talk about something. You didn't even get the sentence out. You got half of a couple of words out, and then you just changed on the spot, man. That's talent. I understand why you do radio, Ron. That's talent. Wow, how'd you do that? Well, it's natural. I get contacted. This is not going to go over well. I get contacted by agencies all the time for the interviews that we do on this program. And they're extremely interesting. I have learned so much, talked to so many celebrities, doctors, experts in every kind of field, officials, politicians on this program. It's been quite a nice ride. Every once in a while, I get pitched a guest to be on the show, and I just refuse it totally for many reasons. Recently, I was asked to do an interview with Facebook, and I said no. I said, I don't know if you listen to my show or not. I'm assuming you don't, because that's an assumption that one can easily make. But I dislike Facebook. I think Facebook is manipulative. It is using me. It is trying to mold and shape my buying habits. I don't trust it. It is too large for our own good. This thing with the 2016 election, remember that? Where foreign entities such as Russia were actually buying and inducing time on Facebook in order to sway the election in the manner in which Russia wanted the election to be swayed. That's a fact. I refuse to expose Facebook on this program for anything other than what they have done. And they acknowledge it. They actually apologized for it. Steve Gutenberg or Mike Zuckerberg or whoever runs that thing is adamantly at the helm and apologizes for what happened, but says, we're doing everything we can. And then we find out that there was more, that there was an orchestrated cover-up by the Facebook officials not to let the public know what Facebook had discerned way back in 2016 and did not warn us about it. I know that the information that I put on Facebook, any personal information, which I have since removed, by the way, has been exploited by Facebook itself. It was the public's understanding that the Facebook thing was just a social media contact deal that was to be kept private among individuals. If information went out public, then it was fine, but that information was not to be used for promotional or selling purposes or manipulative marketing purposes. That is not the case. So I get a call from this agency saying Facebook would like to talk about Facebook Messenger. I said, well, that's Facebook, and I don't do Facebook interviews. And the publicist actually said, which made me feel very comfortable personally, said, everybody seems to be turning down these Facebook interviews. We've gone to other radio stations and other national outlets such as yours, Ron, and they have been turning us down as well. Well, I felt very comfortable with that. I said, well, good, it's not just me then. There's great disdain amongst us all. So I turned it down. The publicist said, that's interesting because other people are turning it down too. And the request was made that when you do this interview, if you were to do it, that you did not mention that they are with Facebook. I said, what? I'm talking about Facebook Messenger, but I'm not supposed to say that's Facebook? I said, no. They want you to say that Facebook Messenger is a separate entity from Facebook. So do not mention Facebook. Only mention Facebook Messenger. I said, oh my God, they are manipulating everything. So now from a marketing standpoint, in order to to be connected to Facebook, now you're supposed to just say Facebook Messenger, that's a separate thing. when indeed, as I understand it, Facebook Messenger is one of the greatly misused hackable situations in their marketing. So I did refuse, and you will never hear that interview on this program. But I'm telling you, man, we have to be so vigilant that it's getting ridiculous. I am more than 10 years old, not much more. I am more than 10, and I do remember a simpler life, which I refer to on a regular basis. And someday, what we're living now will be a simpler life 50 years from now. You can drop me a line and tell me what it's like in my little place in heaven. Or hell, I don't know which at this point. It's up in the air, so to speak. Matter of opinion. I swear that when I was younger, I lived through a simpler time. There was no social media. We didn't have cell phones. We didn't have arms or legs. It was so much simpler. You get up in the morning, you did your stuff, you watch TV, you go to bed, and you have a little dinner, and pretty much that's it. You pet the dog on the top of the head. Nobody knew what the neighbors were going through. Your neighbors could be going through a terrible divorce proceeding, and you living next door would never know that was going on because people didn't talk about their personal stuff. When I was growing up, people didn't talk about their personal stuff. Women wouldn't even say how old they were. You would never ask a woman, "How old are you?" She would never respond. She'd say, "Well, that's none of your business." People didn't give out their personal information at all. Everything was private. And the way you kept it private, you didn't tell other people with your mouth. Now I'm in some type of a strange, bizarre, opposite world where everybody tells everybody else everything voluntarily. And I don't even have to tell you. You can go on a machine, a Google machine, on a thing called Facebook and other things, and you can find out when someone was born, where they're married, who that their spouse's name is, how many children they have, who the children are, and what town you live in, where to find the key near the front door. I mean, where you're from, what country you're connected with, who's your cousin, all the places you lived, all the jobs you had. This is all voluntary from you. It's time to hook up with our guests. I've just been rambling a little bit too much, and we're going to do that, find out about something quite amazing, and that's your doctor's murdering you, probably not on purpose, but still, end result, not good. We'll take a look at that right after this word.
Hi, this is Bob Robinson from Bob's Handy Around the House. I'm a local handyman. I've been in business for the last 50 years on my own, doing light repair work in our area. Whatever you need done, carpentry, painting, floors, tiling, yard work, I can do it all for you. I'll come to your home and do the work for a very reasonable fee. Naked. I should probably mention that I will be naked while I do this work. Buck naked, not a stitch on me. Waving in the wind, in my birthday suit, showing what God gave me, naked as a jaybird. I'll be naked the whole time. I show up naked, I do the work naked, you pay me while I'm naked. Bob's Handy Around the House, Bob Robinson. You can look me up on Facebook, where I am naked.
Good morning.
Hi, Gloria.
Good morning, Ron.
Good to be with you. Gloria York is with us. She's written a very interesting book that kind of hits us all, to be honest with you. It's called Medical Manslaughter. And the question is, will your doctor cause your death? It's a possibility. It is based on a true story. Unfortunately, Gloria, tell me about your husband, Dick.
Okay, about 6 years ago, my husband died due to Dr. Air. So I wrote this medical manslaughter because I wanted to expose this epidemic that's going through the medical field. And whereupon 400,000 patients are dying every year due to doctors making mistakes.
Yeah. Now, your late husband was actually quite prolific in the entertainment field, I understand.
Yes, he was a Chicago legend. He worked with a lot of the name stars. He was in the industry for about 60 years. He worked with the original Rat Pack and Tony Bennett, Johnny Cash. I mean, the names actually are endless. He was an entertainer, singer, and even upon his death, he had several bookings be fulfilled.
And I mentioned that because if you're famous, well off, it doesn't necessarily make any difference. When these situations occur medically, it doesn't matter who you are or where you've come from or what your situation is.
That is so true. And that's why before you even get sick, you should choose an advocate. And this time of the year is a good time because you're going to be around family and friends. So you should start to think about who would you want watching over you if you were sent to the hospital. And you could choose one, two, three people. It doesn't matter, but you should have someone chosen and talk to them about it. Make sure that they know, if I go in the hospital, will you watch over me? And in medical manslaughter, I outline what it takes to be a superior advocate. You're not just to go there and read magazines and eat bonbons. There's a lot to it.
Yeah. And the data is staggering. I thought, you know, this happens sporadically in our country or anywhere, but I, the numbers that you've quoted here are incredibly high.
It's the third largest killer after cancer and heart disease. The third largest killer is Dr. Air.
Wow, that's nearly 500,000 people a year.
Yes, sir. That's so true.
Unbelievable. That's almost scarier than whatever disease may befall you. It doesn't even require any kind of great disease. We know that some, Joan Rivers, for example, her situation where she just went in for testing.
That's right. And, you know, she even questioned that it shouldn't have been done in the office there. Yeah. And this is what I keep emphasizing throughout medical manslaughter is trust your intuition. If something doesn't sound right to you, feel right, speak up and say something. Just because it's a doctor speaking doesn't know that he knows everything. That doesn't mean that he's God.
Right.
So you should question. You should question and say, this doesn't sound right to me.
Yeah. I mean, I think all of us, when you really think about it, know people who passed from procedures and then for some reason were immediately taken into ICU, and it was like, why? What happened there? I mean, it's very scary, and there are connections that we all have to this. And then we get into the nursing home situation, which is a whole nother ball game, but not.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's true. And I recap that also, that the nursing home situation is a very political situation. And you really, when you read the chapter about the nursing home and what life is like there, it'll give you chills. There's a lot of information in the book. You'll be enlightened, frightened, and blown away.
Yeah. So I guess the bottom line is to do your homework ahead of time. So if something like this passes, but it can happen sometimes from simplest procedures. And your book is the true story, what you went through and what actually does occur to these high numbers of people in our country every single year. It's an incredible book, and I'm glad you wrote it, because I've not heard of anybody expressing this before, to be honest with you.
That's true. This is the first book that recaps such a true story in detail. And when you walk away, you learn a lot. And it intertwines in spiritually. There were six miracles that occurred. There's a prayer in there, a never found to fail prayer to the Blessed Mother. Whether you're Catholic or not, this prayer works. And then I give you proof that there is life beyond death. And I prove it to you.
I assume that that had occurred in your situation where some incidents occurred after his death.
Yes, after his death, correct. He actually came back and visited me. I mean, not a foggy shadow. Yeah. I'm talking walk right into the room.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's, and of course I'm a channeler, and he channels and tells me and told me what it's like on the other side. So, you know, you'll get to see that side of life. Life does go on.
Were you a channeler previous to these incidents, or did you become one?
No, I've been a clairaudient, clairvoyant, and a channeler since childhood.
Okay. Yeah. So, So you had this insight. You mentioned that what happened in the hospital was criminal. Are you saying that in the sense that it should have never been, or and you use the term manslaughter like it was almost intentional?
Well, manslaughter is a form of murder,
mm-hmm.
and whether it's voluntary or involuntary, whenever in this situation, I was the wife.
Yeah.
I was the executor for his health,
yeah.
and when I said no sleeping pill, that should have been honored.
Yes,
it shouldn't have been an egotistical doctor saying, I know what I'm doing.
I see.
And then what she did is she started the end of his life because they could not bring him out of the coma.
I see.
And the head of neurology said to me at the end, when they couldn't bring him out of the coma, said to me, let him die. Those were his exact words. Let him die. He's lived a great life.
Yeah.
And of course, I would not let him die.
Right. Wow. Well, it's an incredible book, and it isn't just about that. It encompasses everything around that incident. And again, I don't think there's anybody who wouldn't say to themselves, that can happen to me, that can happen to my family. That's why it's such an important piece of work here, what you've done. Whether you're religious or not, it really has nothing to do with it. Most of us are spiritual if we're not religious, at least in that sense, by definition. Thank you for doing this. And the book's available everywhere, I assume.
Amazon, Barnes, and of course my website is Gloria J. York. York has an E at the end, YORKE.US.
Okay. The book is called Medical Manslaughter. It's based on a true story. It's subtitled, Will Your Doctor Cause Your Death? And a very important book. I appreciate your time with us today.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you, Gloria. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, that'll be quite enough for today. I hope I somewhat entertained you and informed you as well. I'll be back again the next time a weekday rolls around, which is going to be rather soon. Until then, be good to yourself, but be better to others, and I wish you peace.